the way, this is the 30th anniversary of Top Gun. Realize that?
That can't be right. 30 years? Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And Top Gun 2 is coming out this summer, starring Adam Kinzinger, the congressman from the 16th Congressional District here in Illinois. All right. And as we like to always say, he's congressman of the Rocon District. That's what he is.
Take the shot, goose.
Oh, sorry. I was in a different mode.
You got to see all the videos he posts of all that semi-naked beach volleyball that he plays. It's really it's really something.
That's standard. I mean, that's drill weekend.
Yeah, that's what you do. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this Donald Trump. Now, I've been noticing you on the CNN quite a bit of the late. And they keep asking, every time you're on CNN, every time you're on Wolf Blitzer, they're like, and then I guess you were with Anderson Cooper on Friday, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And they're like, so you going with Trump? So you're going to go with Trump? So you're going to go with Trump? And you keep sort of parrying that off. What goes on here? What's in your calculus here? What do you need?
Well, look, politically, the easiest thing for me to do is just to say, yep, I'm a Trump Republican nominee. And I want to put this right out front. This is not against anybody that supports Trump. He's tapped into something and people are attracted to it. And there's nothing wrong with being attracted to it. But, you know, from my perspective as a congressman, but especially as a private citizen, you know, I have to make a really tough decision, which is, you know, I've said pretty openly, some of the things Trump says does not reflect what I think Republican values are. And especially on the area of foreign policy, you know, we talk a lot about how our allies don't trust us under President Obama and our enemies don't fear us. Well, when you have somebody that says basically NATO's unimportant, now our allies are going to trust us less and our enemies, Russia, is going to fear us less. And so that's a concern. And that's what, you know, Donald Trump has said. So what I've said is, look, I'd like to get there. Obviously, I'd like to support the Republican nominee. I always have. But I need to see a less violent tone. I need to see presidential rhetoric. And I want to hear a guy that's, you know, worthy of Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan's job.
You think that's possible, though? He came out of the Reince-Priebus meeting saying they want me to be exactly who I am. And they said, well, do they want you to have a little more of a kinder, gentler, more inclusive, unifying position on some of the issues? No, they want me to be exactly who I am. That doesn't show that he's willing or is planning on becoming more, quote unquote, presidential.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be up to him. I mean, obviously, he got very far on the way he's been acting up to this point. Now, that's just a Republican electorate. That's very different than a general election. And I think if he slips in the polls, I mean, I saw a poll today, he's 13 points down. And, you know, then I think I think he's a smart guy, so I think he'll make whatever calculation he needs to, which is sad to say. I want somebody that's going to be consistent with who they are. But I think, you know, look, he doesn't have political experience. Some people see that as a good thing. But he's going to come around, I think, to understand, hopefully, that you're running for the most powerful job in the world. And your words, even as a candidate, your words have a real impact. And, you know, it's one thing to be upset and angry, as, you know, we all are, with what's been going on in government and kind of what feels like a lack of them listening. But it's another thing to act like a statesman, and I hope he gets there. That's all I can say to this point. You know, I'm not going to just automatically support him because he's a Republican. I'm not going to support Hillary. That's not in the question. But, you know, I hope he gets to where he's supportable. I don't have to agree with him on everything. Nobody's asking for that.
I think that's true of any politics anywhere, right? Because there's a lot of regional politics that get involved in, especially on the national level for the presidency, and so those kinds of debates sometimes they mean something very different in one region of the country or with one constituency than they do with others. But that's really, really not what's at stake here. I mean, what's at stake here is a guy who is not particularly cognizant of the fact that when he's making these statements, he thinks he's negotiating with people. And when you are seen, and you mentioned this to Wolf Blitzer, you mentioned this to Anderson Cooper on Friday night on CNN, and I thought this is interesting. You've traveled the world in the last year, and you have traveled in the Middle East in the last few weeks, and you have Middle Eastern leaders saying to you, hey, what's up with this guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind, so on my trip, obviously, the Middle Eastern leaders are very concerned about some of the practices of President Obama. They think we're turning our back on him. But in the same breath, they say, you know, but you're a front runner. I mean, the idea of banning all Muslims, again, it's seductive. It's seductive talk. It sounds, you know, like a real simple answer to terrorism. The truth is, though, Saudi Arabia just a few weeks ago dealt a huge blow to al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in Yemen. It was a massive, and by them doing that, that is something that American troops don't have to now go do. And AQAP, by the way, is the ones responsible for striking the USS Cole, among other American assets. And so the idea of a blanket ban on Muslims, it may be good politics, unfortunately. But look, I didn't come out here just to be a good politician. I came out here to try to lead in really dark times. And, you know, it's the right thing to do. And the other real quick thing is, I talked to a diplomat from a very friendly country, the United States, and he said, in the Middle East, and he said, look, he said, you know, we have to fight. Just because we're very pro-Western doesn't mean we're not fighting elements of the anti-Western populace. And we are. And he goes, when statements like that are made, it gives huge fuel to internal discussion within this very friendly country about why are we allies with the United States. Now, look, they're not going to turn around and just say, well, shoot, the U.S. doesn't like us. They're going to turn to the Russians, or in some cases they could fall and it turns into chaos and another stronghold for ISIS.
I want to play something. This is Donald Trump talking to Piers Morgan, of all people, on Good Morning Britain.
Oh, he's on that show. I didn't know that.
At least he has to go do something.
Okay.
At least that, when he's talking about the cricket scores and whether Ipswich is going to make the FA Cup.
They really care there, I think.
Yes. Then all
the
of a sudden,
time is Railroad 30.
The British Prime Minister, David Cameron, recently said he stands by his comments that your position on Muslims was stupid, divisive and wrong.
Yeah.
He wouldn't retract them and he wouldn't apologize for saying that.
Honestly, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's fine.
But if you're president and he's the British Prime Minister,
it looks like we're not going to have a very good relationship. Who knows? I hope to have a good relationship with him. But it sounds like he's not willing to address the problem either.
I mean, it's unbelievable. This is the best friend of the United States, Great Britain. We have a special relationship that we both call it. And, you know, look, at the beginning, we were upset when President Obama seemed to have a bad relationship with the United Kingdom. And we need to have that same sense of standard now. Like, look, there is a level of diplomacy. You know, people may not like diplomacy, but it's a reality. And going, getting on a morning show and saying basically you don't care what the prime minister of that country thinks, a conservative, by the way, is just not, again, it's not reflective of how a statesman and how the most powerful man in the world, should he win, should talk to our allies. That's when our allies don't trust us. When we talk about our allies not trusting us, it goes both ways.
Right. And the alliance between the United States and the United Kingdom is significant on so many levels. First of all, there's a huge economic partnership, and not even economics in terms of goods being passed. It's financial economics and the way that their banking and our banking is intertwined, and the way that their intelligence and their foreign service is intertwined, both in terms of spy work and diplomacy and all the things the State Department does, everything the CIA does, and what their organizations do, their bureaus do, is very, 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 very important in terms of coordination.
Right.
And if all of a sudden you want to start having, I mean, we've all seen James Bond movies. We know how this goes. If you want to start, if you want to start having a problem with that, you know, that blinds us at some level. And basically, Trump doesn't like anybody correcting him on what he doesn't know. And it was very interesting because Bill Gates was on this weekend. He sat down with CBS, I think it was, for Face the Nation, and talked about the, you know, Bill Gates had worked, you know, as, you know, military advisor and then as an intelligence advisor and, you know, senior advisor to the president. He'd worked in every administration basically since Republicans and Democrats since Jimmy Carter. And he stopped. He said the thing that really alarms him about Donald Trump is he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And he refuses to acknowledge that he doesn't know things. And he's not going, and he doesn't seem to be listening to the advice of the people who've now been put in his, in, you know, in his orbit to advise him on these things. I mean, if he were, he wouldn't say things like that. He'd say, well, you know, we have a disagreement, but, you know, if we sit down, we might be able to work it out. You don't want to telegraph to the world that the United States and Britain, their greatest ally, are all of a sudden going to become disassociated. And you're right, Adam. I mean, the president did have a problem initially with this. They fixed it. And it was some of that problem was a little bit of it was sort of press driven. because there was some, you know, I remember Fox got on this this narrative that because the Barack Obama's dad, as a Kenyan, had trouble with, you know, the Imperial British in his own country, and that's the reason that he returned a gift, and he wasn't very diplomatic of them in the first year. And you know, Barack Obama was learning the job, but but at least he understood. He started to listen to the people around him, and he adjusted to it. I don't trust that Donald Trump will be able to do that.
Well, and we're putting a great deal of faith in the fact that he's going to learn, and we're putting a great deal of faith that he's going to surround himself with advisors that know, and then that he's going to listen to him. I mean, look, Great Britain has been involved with us in the campaign against ISIS, the campaign in Afghanistan, largest contributor of troops besides us to the campaign in Iraq. You know, I can admit, for instance, that, you know, of all the areas of the world, the one I know the least about, and I still know a lot about it, is Asia. I can admit that. And then I can turn around and say, but I want to talk to people that know a lot about the Asian area and some of the details I need to know. But here's the thing. I mean, why can't Donald Trump talk that tough to Vladimir Putin? I mean, David Cameron, he's saying, I don't care. It looks like we're going to have a bad relationship. Why doesn't he say the same thing about Vladimir Putin? Instead, Putin, a former KGB agent that knows how to manipulate people, and narcissists especially, turns around and says, I like Trump. So now Trump fawns all over Vladimir Putin and stresses that we need to have a great relationship with Russia. These are all warning signs to what does Donald Trump really think. And this is why, while I don't fault anybody in any way that supports him, this is why I can't just automatically say I'm 100% for Donald Trump only because he has an R after his name.
It's a great conversation to have. I think what you guys are talking about are the issues I wish the New York Times and Washington Post had been focusing on. I'm not sure these character assassinations about the women piece in the New York Times really prove that much or surprise people that much. And the Washington Post article about him being an egomaniac who called, you know, in a voice was kind of fun to make fun of, but does it surprise anybody that he's an egomaniac? I don't think so. It feels like there's a lot of ink being wasted on those types of issues, whereas the real issues, the kind of ones you guys are talking about.
Well, I have a theory on why they're doing that. I have a theory that a lot of that's being driven by the Clinton campaign because they think that policy doesn't matter to his voters. So why battle him on policy? If they can humiliate him the way that he humiliates other people, maybe his voters will respond to that. But all right, I want to very, very quickly before we let Congressman go here, you just did something that's a pretty cool initiative with being able to take battlefield medics, some of the best trained medical personnel on the planet, right? Right. And Navy corpsmen and people like that who are coming back from service in Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, throughout in places we don't even know about and being able to get them fast tracked into local service jobs here in emergency medical technology. Right.
Yeah, it's huge because two things. Number one, obviously, veterans need jobs and they're the best trained out there. Secondly, you know, rural areas like my district's largely rural. A lot of these small fire departments and stuff have a hard time recruiting EMTs, but there's a lot of veterans with that training. So this basically says if you were trained in the military, you ought to be able to transfer that over to getting a state license because a lot of states require you to do more paperwork, more testing, and everything else. And I learned this, frankly, from being a pilot. I got my training in the military and then just took an equivalency test, and next thing you know, I have all my civilian ratings. So I hope this is a model for even future jobs, truck driving, you know, diesel mechanics, anything else. But I'm proud it passed the House. We hope it gets through the Senate and signed by the president.
All right. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Thanks, Congressman.
You bet. Thanks. Take care, guys.
All right. There he goes.